Welcome into Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. I'm Dr. Tim Clinton.
And I'm Dr. Zach Clinton, and together we're your hosts. Thank you for joining us.
If you enjoyed today's program and you feel called to help us equip the church to provide mental health care and to help those in need, visit our foundation at aaccfoundation.org. That's aaccfoundation.org. Hey, there you're going to find a little bit more about the impact we're having in local communities to strengthen families and individuals. We're on a mission to help equip people everywhere to improve their relationship with God and the ones they love.
We'd love for you to be a part of our family. Let's bring a message of hope and encouragement to today's generations. Your gift ensures that this program and your station remain on the air. And on today's program, my dad, Dr. Tim Clinton, will be joined by a great guest. So let's get started.
So glad you've joined us. It's Wednesday. We're all in anticipation of tomorrow, which is Thanksgiving. Now, many of you know how I feel about gratitude. It's a powerful tool. Being grateful, expressing that sentiment, can literally rewire, physically change the way you feel and improve your mood. The Roman philosopher Cicero put it this way: gratitude is not only the greatest of all the virtues, but the parent of all the others. Well, my guest, he's an old friend. He's a scholar. I like to think of him as a resident professor. He's Dr. Jerry Newcomb. Jerry and I caught up a while back to discuss the true meaning of our national holiday, Thanksgiving, and Jerry explains the historical origins of the holiday that are woven into the fabric of our American heritage. And with all that, I say an early happy Thanksgiving to you from our entire Clinton family and all of us here at the AACC. Hope you're going to enjoy this insightful, inspiring conversation with Dr. Jerry Newcomb on the origins of our national Thanksgiving celebration. Enjoy. Jerry, tomorrow is Thanksgiving. Many of our listeners are maybe in the kitchen right now, preparing their special dishes for tomorrow's celebration. By the way, I don't like turkey. I prefer ham, if you can believe that. Maybe grandma's special recipe handed down through the generations, all of it kind of with a thanks and a praise to God with our families. Others listening right now might be on their way to the grocery store, I don't know, in the car, rushing, pick up last-minute items. No matter where they are, I wanted to slow it down here for a moment and talk to you about the holidays and what it really means. What some 401 years ago was the very first documented Thanksgiving meal that was served in the Plymouth Colony. I think 1621. Simply amazing. There's a lot of detailed information. I didn't really understand that until I was prepping here and going through this, Jerry. But around that first gathering, some of those details, maybe you could take us back there. But the colonists, they were outnumbered more than 2-1 by the Native American guests. Edward Winslow was a separatist who had traveled on the Mayflower in 1620. He was one of several senior leaders on the ship. The preceding winter had been harsh on the colonists. I couldn't believe this. 78% of the women who had traveled on the Mayflower had perished that winter, leaving only around 50 colonists to attend the very first Thanksgiving. Jerry, what did you find out? You're the historian here. Take us back, and what was it like for them?
Well, it was very difficult to survive. I mean, their goal in coming over in the first place, they just wanted to worship Jesus Christ in the purity of the gospel and not be harassed by the government. And initially, they were from England, and they were from mid-England, about 400 miles or whatever north of London. And they finally, after they had become a church body and so forth, which was illegal at the time, reading from the Bible was illegal and so forth, they managed to make it over to Holland, which they stayed there for about 12 years. But that became so difficult. They realized that to retain the purity of their congregation, now that Jamestown had become a permanent settlement, why don't we go to the New World? We'll go to the northern part of Virginia, where we could still be part of the British settlement and get permission to do all this. And they did. And so they were literally sailing for the northern parts of Virginia, which at that time, Virginia's map was much larger. They got blown off course. They were providentially hindered. They were up there in New England, Cape Cod, which they were not prepared to do. And some of the hired strangers that were aboard the Mayflower were even talking about the possibility of striking out on their own since they were under no government's jurisdiction. The Pilgrims made world history on November 11th, 1620. They wrote up an agreement for self-government under God, which is called the Mayflower Compact. And historians tell us that was the first step toward ultimately the creation of the Declaration of Independence about 150 years later and the U.S. Constitution. Okay, so then after they created the Mayflower Compact and then they were looking around for places to settle and they finally found Plymouth in early December, then, as you mentioned, the winter came and so many of their numbers died. As you noted, there was only even four married women that survived that brutal winter. In fact, it's as if many of them, a lot of it was starvation because they had very little food amongst them, including some corn that they had found. And then they later even repaid back to the Indians. So then by the time you get to the harvest time, you know, in the fall of 1621, now they could see, you know, it's beginning to become permanent despite, you know, all the deaths that they had experienced in the winter several months before.
You know, when people talk about Thanksgiving, they always go back to the fact that this is an American holiday, an American tradition, and we are grateful to God for our nation, and then we're thankful for everything else in our life. But Jerry, you've always had a deep affection in your heart for looking at our Judeo-Christian heritage, and you take us right back to these moments, anchor us there a little bit more as we are pondering Thanksgiving, and then to step us into that word, what it really means to give thanks, what they must have been through, and how hard it is at times to give thanks, especially when it seems like the wheels are coming off and life's not the way it's supposed to be.
That's a great point. Well, the Apostle Paul tells us, give thanks in all circumstances. And I think the Pilgrims followed that model. They gave thanks in all circumstances. And they practiced this tradition on a regular basis. And then later on, George Washington, who became our first president under the U.S. Constitution, he made Thanksgiving a holiday. He called for the first national day of Thanksgiving. That was in 1789, the first year he was the president. By the way, the very men who gave us the First Amendment, which is often distorted today to mean that we have to have this strict separation of church and state, by which they often mean the separation of God and state, which is not something the founders would have ever agreed with. But anyway, that first Congress gave us the First Amendment. They also said to George Washington, hey, now that we've been able in peace and felicity to create our own agreement for government, the Constitution, you know, how is this government going to work? Why don't you declare a national day of thanksgiving to God? And he did, 1789. And it's a beautiful proclamation, October 3, 1789. You can read it online. Remember that date, October 3, 1789. And he declared it for the next month. And then it was Lincoln. Talk about difficult days. It was Lincoln during the difficult days and dark days of the Civil War, where we weren't even sure if we would survive as one nation, much less one nation under God. It was Lincoln who said, let's have Thanksgiving as an annual holiday. And so really, ever since the days of the Civil War, America has had an annual reminder of our Judeo-Christian roots. It's called Thanksgiving.
Jerry, we're thankful for God's goodness and grace. I know around the table tomorrow we'll be talking about name two things that you're really thankful for. My mother started that tradition in our family. And Jerry, a lot of people say, you know, I'm thankful for our family. I'm thankful for how God's taking care of us. I'm thankful for health. For those early settlers, we're thankful in particular, too, for the freedoms that they now had. Even though there was hardship, freedom was at the very core of their being in this moment, wasn't it?
It was. It was the whole reason that they sacrificed everything so that they could come here and worship Jesus Christ in the purity of their conscience. And it's interesting, if I could give a quick contrast, the Pilgrims were separatists. Okay, they believed, as they would read the Bible, you know, this is going back to the late 1500s, as they would read the Bible and then they would compare what they would see in the Church of England at the time, they felt like, wow, these two are incongruous. We need to get back, you know, to biblical salvation and so forth, the core message. And meanwhile, their spiritual cousins, the Puritans, who were a much, much larger number, they thought, well, let's stay within the Church of England to work for its purity. And so they ended up becoming Puritans. And what ended up happening was, in 1620, the Pilgrims came here, blown off course, as I said. They started this toehold in New England, and then after them, about 10 years later, the Puritans started following in wave after wave of mass migration, so much so that by the 1690s or thereabout, the Pilgrims had lost all their, you know, distinct identity. They didn't even exist for all practical purposes. Everything was engulfed by the Puritans. I think that this is a very interesting point, because the persecution in England got so bad against the Puritans that by the time of the 1640s, literally, England experienced its major civil war, and religion really was the driving force, because of the denial of freedom for the Puritans to practice their faith in the purity of the gospel. And so many came here, but many stayed there and fought. And one man who was on his way to migrate to America was Oliver Cromwell. And when the religious conflicts, you know, raged around him in mid-England, he decided to stay and fight. And he ended up winning and was victorious. And, you know, for about 15 years or so, they had the Republic short-lived, but he died in 1658, and his son took over, and then finally it was like, now within a year or two, they brought back Charles II, who was a lot nicer to the religious dissidents, whereas his father, Charles I, had been an extreme oppressor against the religious nonconformists. I mean, you've heard of the Star Chamber. Well, a lot of those victims in the Star Chamber, which is in Westminster Abbey, they were Puritans, and they were cut in their noses, and, you know, they had their foreheads branded SL, seditious, libel, all these kind of terrible things. So they paid a high price just to live out the purity of the gospel. But those Puritans made a huge impact on America, because thanks to the Pilgrims coming first, the Puritans were able to create their city on a hill, and then some of the Puritans that left Boston, then they went on to found Connecticut, which today calls itself, to this day, the Constitution State, because they created the first fully developed Constitution, which talks about the purity and liberty of the gospel of our Lord Jesus. I mean, this is what they were all about. They're the ones who started Harvard, Yale, Dartmouth. I mean, I'm talking about the Puritans. I mean, so America owes a great debt to the Puritans who set out to create the city on a hill, but no Pilgrims, you probably wouldn't have had the Puritans, certainly not in New England, the way it all worked out.
Our special guest, Dr. Jerry Newcomb, he serves as executive director of the Providence Forum. He is a historian, fascinating discussion with him today, best-selling author. You probably also recognize his name from being the senior producer and the on-air host of Truth That Transforms. It's a flagship television broadcast of an old friend of Dr. Dobson's, Dr. D. James Kennedy, and his ministries down there. Jerry, again, a delightful conversation with you. You know, my dad served in World War II. He would tell us the stories of what it was like to be in the South Pacific on the USS Pennsylvania back in the day. When he came back stateside, he told us that he kissed the ground. When he got back to America, he was so happy and thankful to God. Jerry, he was a pastor for almost 60 years in the hills of central Pennsylvania. My dad taught us to love God, and he taught us that freedom wasn't free.
Wow.
And he said, if you would learn the sacrifices that have gone before you to enjoy the freedoms that you have, you would look at this country differently. Jerry, you guys are working on a new documentary, A City on a Hill. Really comes from, I think, what, Matthew 5:14?
Right.
A city on a hill, Jesus said, cannot be hidden. In this documentary, you're on a mission. And it's connecting dots here, because this conversation about Thanksgiving, the very first Thanksgiving, and where we're going in this country. Jerry, take us to what's in your heart. Why did you feel it was really important at this time? Give us that elevator pitch on the documentary, A City on a Hill.
Sure. The City on a Hill documentary essentially picks up where the Pilgrims left off. So in other words, I start with the Puritans who founded Boston. That was the original, you know, the City on a Hill. John Winthrop, their leader, said aboard the ship Arabella, "For we shall be as a city on a hill, the eyes of all the world shall be upon us." And his hearers, of course, knew he's talking about, he's quoting from Jesus Christ with that phrase. But that became, in effect, a metaphor what America could become. And one man that really appreciated that metaphor was Ronald Reagan. And he talked about how, you know, America can be and should be that city on a hill. And that documentary, by the way, opens up with Boston and Winthrop and so forth, then goes into Connecticut and Rhode Island and deals with, well, what about these, you know, the Salem witchcraft trials, which is a very aberrational and not the sum and substance of the Puritans, which is a real shame. It's like people know about the Puritans more from something like that, that was an ugly exception, not what they should be known of. They should be remembered for Harvard and Yale and Dartmouth, and, you know, and the New England Primer, and, you know, and mass literacy, literacy for the masses. That is a Christian invention. This special closes with William Penn, a whole section on William Penn, the devout Quaker, founder of Penn's Woods. When he found out that Charles II, the king in England, was willing to give him this large land in the New World, and he wanted to name it in honor of his father, Sir Admiral Penn, who, you know, served under Charles II. William Penn the Younger thought that is pretty vain to be, you know, to have this colony named after our family name, you know, just call it Sylvania, you know, Woods. But the Charles II said, no, we're going to call it Pennsylvania. So this is his father. But William Penn, the Quaker, really set so much in motion for what later became the United States, too. I mean, he made huge contributions. His city, Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, which, you know, comes right from the Bible, that became the cultural capital of America. Historian Paul Johnson, whom we really rely on a lot, he's still alive, by the way. British historian Paul Johnson wrote a book called A History of the American People. And he said that, in a sense, Philadelphia was the last outpost of the Puritans in early America, colonial America. That's very substantial. It was in Philadelphia that, of course, they wrote the Declaration of Independence and where they wrote the Constitution and so forth. Then it was the first, well, it wasn't the very first capital, because when George Washington was sworn in, he was sworn in New York City. And then almost, I'm not sure exactly when, but just within months, they moved it back to Philadelphia as the capital of the country until they made Washington, D.C. To become the capital. But Philadelphia was extremely important, but it was all built on one thing. This, again, goes back to Jesus and the Golden Rule, or the Sermon on the Mount, because the Sermon on the Mount, that's where we get City on a Hill, but we also get the Golden Rule. As Dr. Peter Lilback explains in our documentary, A City on a Hill, when Penn was sent to the Tower, meaning, you know, he was punished for his views, he was sent to jail in England because of his religious nonconformance. He said, I didn't like that. And so I determined that I would create a place, a large place, a holy experiment where people could be free to believe what they wanted to believe. But basically, they still had to, you know, it still wanted a godly framework in terms of their morality. So God was never thrown out of this scenario. And in fact, both William Penn and Roger Williams, about, you know, 75 years or whatever before him, the one who founded Rhode Island. Rhode Island became this little sliver where they made, this is a place where people could believe what they wanted to believe and not be bothered for their opinions. Pennsylvania, rather, became this large place, same thing. But virtually all these people were believers in the Judeo-Christian God. They didn't all fit in the same denominations, though.
Jerry, as we go, you know, we're only one generation away from forgetting the God of our fathers.
Amen.
One generation away from forgetting our history, our roots, and what connects things together. But what's that one thing you want to make sure we take with us today as we prepare our hearts for tomorrow, as we reflect on our nation, everything we're going through. It's been a pretty tough go over the last couple of years. What are some seeds here that we can just reflect on and be thankful for?
We should be thankful for everything God has given us. And Dr. D. James Kennedy once preached a whole message about gratitude and why it's so important. And he called it the Christian's magic wand, because living a life of gratitude and thanksgiving changes everything. And frankly, a lot of our founders were men of great thanksgiving. So we should be grateful even through it all, because, you know, tomorrow is a new day and today's a new day. Be grateful every day and it will change your life.
1 Chronicles 16:34 says, "Oh, give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good, and his mercy endures forever." And he's been good to us. And God's great, and his steadfast love, the psalmist declares, is what it's all about. Jerry, what a delightful conversation. Thank you for reminding us of our Judeo-Christian heritage. Well, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Fascinating to see how our founding fathers and the first pilgrims were able to persevere and see how God's providence was at the root of everything they did. Hey, and happy Thanksgiving to you from the entire Clinton family and all of us here at the AACC, the American Association of Christian Counselors. I hope you enjoyed this insightful, inspiring conversation again with Dr. Jerry Newcomb on the origins of the National Thanksgiving Celebration. Zach and I'll be right back with you here next time on Life, Love, Faith, and Family. Until then, God's richest blessings on you. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Life, Love, Faith, and Family, a production of the American Association of Christian Counselors. If you enjoyed today's broadcast and want to help equip the church to provide Christian mental health care, visit aaccfoundation.org. Your donation ensures this program and your station stay on the air. On behalf of our co-hosts, Dr. Tim Clinton and his son, Zach, this is Jim Kress. We look forward to having you with us again next time. May God bless you.
This is Dr. Shawnee Anderson, and I'm a licensed clinical psychologist who's been in practice for over 30 years. In my clinical experience, one of the hardest parts for someone struggling with their mental health is the very first step, the just reaching out for help part. I understand that asking for help is hard, but finding that help shouldn't be. At Christian Care Connect, the mission is to make it easier to find a Christian clinician or coach who is compatible with you, someone you feel comfortable with, who shares your faith and values. Whether you're walking through grief, battling anxiety or depression, or facing any other of life's challenges, excellent mental health care providers are here to come alongside you with support that is both clinically excellent and distinctly Christian. If you or someone you know is looking for help and healing, we invite you to take that next step today. Go to ChristianCareConnect.com to find a provider within 100 miles of you. For further support or questions, you can email us at contact@ChristianCareConnect.com. A new way to start your journey to wellness and peace of mind.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. Zach Clinton, licensed counselor from the American Association of Christian Counselors, with your Mental Health Minute. You were wired for connection, and who you bond with literally reshapes your brain. Science reveals that human relationships affect neuroplasticity, which is the brain's ability to grow and adapt. And Proverbs 27:17 says, "As iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another." You see, healthy attachments, especially in childhood, form neural pathways of safety, trust, and regulation. Even if your early relationships were fractured, your brain can still rewire through safe, attuned connections later in life. Attachment literally impacts everything: how you love, react, trust, and even heal. So make sure your relationships are promoting safety, growth, and honesty. If not, invest in one relationship where you feel seen and safe today, because healing starts there. This has been your Mental Health Minute with Dr. Zach Clinton. For more information, visit aacc.net.
Do people ever come to you asking for help, maybe hope? How about prayer? Do you ever wish you understood the issues better that people are wrestling with? Or how about how to use the Bible more effectively in caring for people? If so, I'd love to get a copy of our Care and Counsel Bible in your hands, featuring 116 topics written by some of the world's best mental health and ministry experts. I think you'll love it. Topics like discouragement, abuse, depression, divorce, anxiety, abortion, and more. So you can learn more about these issues and how to use the Bible more effectively, how to share passages of Scripture with others, maybe even yourself, as you're sitting down over a cup of coffee. You know what I love most about this Bible is that it's so easy to use. You can find right up front an index with subjects, key passages of Scripture, personality profiles, and so much more to go to. So you can use the Bible more effectively in caring for other people. The Care and Counsel Bible right now is retailing for $85. We're going to make it available to you for just $49.99 plus shipping. I think you're going to love it. Hey, for more information about how you can get this Bible right now, go to careandcounsel.com. That's careandcounsel.com.